This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
It's time for our Monday serial, a respectable veneer written by Rachel Doré, published by Upstart Press and narrated by Romy Hooper. This serial has been made possible by funding from the Earl Creativity and Development Trust with collaboration from Manawatu People's Radio. A Respectable Veneer is a story about love and courage, but we remind you of our regular content warning. There are elements of violence and references to child abuse. A note, this week's episode contains profanity. Please be aware of your listening environment. Last time, Ruby was drawn to a sign in a shop window.
The bell over the door tinkled, and Ruby stepped into another world. It was as though she had stepped into a setting for a play or a film, a tiny sample of modish European elegance where people spoke in hushed tones. Only a couple of weeks ago, she had been dressed in her best frock to accompany a gentleman to the Auckland Art Gallery for some flash function or other. It was a place of beauty, where time seemed suspended. She'd had the chance to go often and learned about art and artists, soaked up new ideas. She couldn't help smiling. What on earth had the uniformed gallery staff thought, seeing her on the arm of a different gentleman each time there was one of those events? If anyone had talked behind her back, she didn't know it and couldn't afford to care. Here, she stood in awe. In a hat shop. Everything outside the present moment stopped. How could she know that this was what she needed? Now, beyond her circumstances, in spite of all she'd been through, she was transported. Alive. Rapture lit her, warming the skin of her face and the inside of her heart. Like the window display, there were not many hats on show. Just 7 examples of the milliner's art were on gleaming chrome stands. Arrayed down the centre of a black wooden table, affecting an impression of outstanding elegance. Ruby smiled. In that setting, even a sack might look splendid. But these understated hats were masterpieces of modern millinery, exquisitely finished. From what she could tell, they were silk-lined. Design samples for special daytime occasions, exclusive daywear hats, and others for glamorous evenings, each reflected from different angles in large, cleverly placed mirrors around the walls, softly lit by opaque globes suspended from the ceiling. A green, brimless half hat, made to curve over the wearer's skull, stood out from the rest. It had a jaunty cockade of looped and curled green felt strips, top-stitched in contrasting green, audaciously arching from one side to the other, a suggestion of a cockeyed half-halo, an amusing hat. It taunted her to try it on. In a hat like that, she might face the world. There didn't seem to be anyone in attendance. She was daring herself to touch it when she caught sight of herself in a full-length mirror. In the silver frame, she saw the horrid coat slung over her skinny arm, the second-hand brown jumper, the silverfish-eaten cuffs folded back out of sight now itched her wrist, the limp skirt, the scuffed blue shoes, the thick stockings wrinkling at one ankle, the finder's keeper's green scarf knotted at her neck, the wind-blown hair that surrounded a harried, sallow face. The sticking plaster was still on her heel, and dried blood had marked the lip of her shoe. She looked like a creature that had crawled out of a rag bag and ought to go back into it. Her hand was on the door handle. Too bad. Modern women often went hatless these days, although it wasn't respectable. On the other hand, she grinned wryly. She hadn't been respectable for half her life. In her wretched state, no hat would help. With a longing look at the green hat, she opened the door. The bell tinkled again, and a heavy drape in the corner moved aside.
Ah, the green hat.
The voice, warm and foreign-sounding, belonged to a petite, ageless lady who glided into the room with the fluidity of a dancer. Dark hair was smoothed back into a chignon from an unsmiling, pleasant face.
That style could suit you well, madam.
There was no sarcasm or patronizing tone.
But you are not choosing a hat today, I think.
Ruby's scalp tingled hotly.
The notice?
The woman touched the green hat daintily, as though Ruby's scrutiny had shifted it sideways.
I assume you have experience with fine stitching and finishing?
Yes, soft furnishings, fancy cushions, and a bit of dressmaking.
What I want may require a more particular hand.
The corners of the woman's mouth twitched in a hint of a smile.
If it's possible, if you have anything, said Ruby, I can show you. Good. A little spirit and a little confidence. I like that. My name is Hoja. Madame Hoja.
The name was strange to the ear, not unlike a soft, guttural sneeze. Ruby hoped she'd never have to say it without practicing first.
You will address me as Madame.
Yes, Madame, said Ruby, relieved. Thank you.
You will follow me.
It was a command. Ruby was shown into a small room behind the drape, lit by low-hanging shaded bulbs, with natural light entering through the frosted lower panes in a sash window.
My little studio.
Sit, Madame directed, placing a bare felt hat in front of her.
This spray of feathers is the trim for this capulet.
So? She indicated a similar hat on a cloth-wrapped stand that already had feathers pinned to it. With thin, graceful hands, Madame lifted the hat from the head-shaped stand.
This is the poupette.
Madame turned the stand so Ruby could see the contour of the human head shape that had a featureless plane where the face would be.
The poupette is used to see, to judge, the proportion of trim on the hat, the fit, the elegant angle.
She held the hat up.
And this, you see it is pinned. The trim goes thus. It must be stitched just so. Now you, let me see what you can do.
Madame was at Ruby's shoulder, watching her hands as she began with a tiny holding stitch that would be invisible under the spray of feathers. Once she had positioned the spray and had a nod from Madame, she caught the spine of each feather with the thread and wound the thread around the shaft, then stitched the arrangement in place. The final stitch was knotted. Before she snipped the thread, she hesitated, unsure. She held her breath as Madame examined her work.
I can see, Madame said with a smile, you have some intelligence and some ability. At times, you may bring the stitch through to the inside for strength. All Vardo hats are lined. You have done well. Now, snip your thread.
Can you start tomorrow?
Friday? Yes. Good. We shall have a little talk. We shall have coffee.
The afternoon had disappeared. The shops were closing. There was no time to buy a treat for Edie to celebrate. Still, she had a wonderful story to tell her at bedtime. The closer her feet took her to the door of Arcadia House, the further her spirits dropped. After the serene atmosphere of Salon Vardo, the squalor and mayhem of Arcadia House was hard to face. From the foyer, she wanted to call out to Edie, I'm here. I'm sorry I'm late. That's what she would call if it were her own place.
When she opened the front door, she was hit by a familiar smell. At Rat's Nest, one of the girls had discovered curry. Tonight, Ruby recognized the odor of slightly curried sausages. Ruby had feared they'd be eating Harry's boil-up for days, so curry was welcome. Today, contesting with the spice was the distinct stink of badly singed mutton. A clattering row came from the kitchen.
"Bert, what the fuck you doing?"
Pim was shrieking.
"I told you I'm the one cooking tea."
"And I told you I'm not having any of that horrible wog muck," Bert shouted.
"Incinerating good chops, you old bastard," Pim screeched. "Who the hell's paying for him, eh?"
The other voices were less distinct, arguing about spiced food, sausages, the burning of meat, and about the argument itself.
"Who used the last of the rice and didn't write it on the board?"
It was hard to tell whose voice that was. Something clanged in the sink. Whatever it was would have chipped the enamel. Edie was not in the living room reading. The woman in the dining room, hunched over her magazine, wouldn't have noticed anything. Ruby was yelling before she got to the kitchen.
"Edie! Where's Edie?"
Panic dried her mouth.
"Hello, love."
Pim was breathless.
"Excuse us. Where's Edie?"
Pim made a face that said she neither knew nor had the time to be bothered. The mutterer grinned her shy, empty grin and used her best bets to wave smoke away from the gas grill. Someone was mashing potatoes. Stepping over a spilled mess of sliced cabbage on the floor, Ruby raced to the back door, shouting for Edie.
"Anyone want a mutton chop?"
Bert was saying as he flapped a tea towel. Edie ran into Ruby's arms.
"Mum, guess what? I've been gardening with Ron."
Ruby held Edie at arm's length and studied her. Her clothes, her knees, her hands, her face.
"Are you all right?"
Edie frowned.
"Of course. Ron was showing me."
"Come with me." Ruby took Edie's hand.
"Mum, what's wrong?"
In a turmoil of relief, fear, and anger, Ruby dragged Edie out of the kitchen to the foot of the stairs.
"Didn't I tell you never, ever to go off with men we don't know?" "I wasn't going to, but I heard Pim say she wanted me out of her hair."
"Well, I'll be talking to her."
"Don't, Mum. Anyhow, we nearly know Ron."
Ruby growled her exasperation. She wanted to shake Edie until her teeth rattled. Edie's head dropped.
"Ron's nice. I can tell. We planted baby plants that are going to grow up to be Brussels sprouts. I found out about weeds."
Ruby crumpled. She couldn't carry on like this. They sat on the bottom step, arms locked around each other. Ruby hoped Edie would never learn what drove her fret and panic. Now, she let Edie comfort her until they heard the trolley rattle into the dining room. Arcadia House would have to do for the time being. Something had to turn up. Edie looked up from her book with a scowl when Ruby opened the door of their room.
"I'm sorry, chicken, I didn't mean to be away so long." "What if I needed to go to the lab?" said Edie, reproachfully.
"Did you?"
"No, but still."
Edie let the book close.
"Were you talking to Mr. Woods?"
"Just for a little while." Edie raised herself on her elbow.
"I was waiting for you. I got worried."
"Why? You knew I was coming back."
"But still."
"Here I am." Ruby rubbed her cheek against Edie's head. She'd been thoughtless. Douglas had turned up late and they'd spent an hour talking. Talking. Forgetting Edie waiting for her. When she'd glimpsed his watch, it was nearly 9 o'clock and she'd flown to Edie without telling him her news. At least at Rat's Nest, one of the girls was always there to mind the girl at night. Back then, Ruby had no choice. Now, she and Edie were alone. It struck her like a bolt. Edie was all she had, and she was all Edie had. She slid into Edie's bed, pulling her girl to her in a tight embrace. "I do love you so," she whispered.
"Mom," said Edie, "you're squeezing me, and I can't hear what you're saying."
"Budge over, my sweet," said Ruby, releasing her, "and I'll tell you my news." Edie squirmed and grinned, hearing about the millinery shop, and how, even though Madame must be quite old, she was as dainty as Margot Fontaine.
"But, Mum, who's Margot Fontaine?"
"A famous ballet dancer. And Madame gave me real coffee in a tiny cup, and I had to do different sewing jobs to show what I can do."
"She was pleased with you, wasn't she?"
"Yes, she was. So, I got the job." Edie wriggled.
"Oh, goody!"
"And Madame wants me to work full time. She told me she'd been hoping to find someone with the right skills." Ruby half closed her eyes, picturing what had happened. What had pulled her into a milliner's of all places, where she felt as though a coin had been dropped into a slot within her, and some mechanism in her that she'd forgotten had come to life. She put her arms around Edie again and held her close. Edie pulled away and looked into Ruby's face.
"Do you have to go every day?"
"Yes, and I start tomorrow."
"But tomorrow's Friday," said Edie. "Why can't you start on Monday, and we can..."
"Madam wants me immediately. Besides, the sooner I start, the sooner I get paid."
"You won't work weekends, though, eh?"
"No. And don't say eh."
"How much money will you get?"
"I don't know yet," said Ruby.
"Didn't you ask?"
"It's not polite to talk about money. I mightn't have got it if I had. People don't like that sort of thing."
"Why did the sign say it was only for 1 or 2 days?
"Well, what she said was..." Ruby tried to mimic Madame's soft accent.
"How could one write a sign saying, 'I want to test people for suitability'? No, that would not do at all."
"That would not do at all," Edie giggled.
"Shh! Don't you dare repeat it." Ruby was laughing too. "Get under the blankets, you're causing a draft." Ruby kissed her cheek. "Now go to sleep."
"Hang on."
Edie lifted her head.
"What's going to happen about me? What will I do while you're working?"
Every time Ruby closed her eyes, waiting for sleep, her mind seemed to be on a rubber band, pulling and twanging at her, to and fro, over the events of the day. She ought to pinch herself. But a small fear wormed its way under her excitement. Anything that fell into place as quickly as that had to have snags in it. When Madame had heard about the complication of Edie and the upcoming school holidays, Ruby had steeled herself to be turned down. Madame's face had been unreadable. Her eyes had bored into Ruby's for an instant, then gave a slight nod and said,
"You will not be late."
If it weren't for Madame's immediate need for an experienced finisher, Edie wouldn't be allowed on the premises. What was going to happen when Edie started school? They'd cross that bridge when they came to it. Rolling over was impossible with Edie's knee jammed against her thigh. Clutching the bed rail, she tried to haul herself over. Edie rolled into the hollow behind her. There was no going back. Madame had looked into her eyes. Had she guessed the truth? Had she seen what Ruby was and decided to overlook it, just to get a job done? What if she fired her once the urgent job was finished? Ruby could kick herself. In the morning, she'd have to tell Edie there'd be no chance of getting about for the school holidays. There'd be other holidays somewhere in the future. Her eyelids grew heavy, and she let her mind drift to the calm oasis that was Vardo. This soon stoked worries about the work Madame expected her to do. Apparently the usual girl had been called away, leaving an unfinished order for a bridal party. On the way back from Vardo, she'd passed a millinery shop with the window crowded with hats, like fruit in a fruiterer's. Madame had mentioned department stores that turned out ready-to-wears. Ruby smiled, remembering how Madame's nostrils twitched and her upper lip curled when she mentioned them. Ruby imagined the upper crust of Palmerston North happily paying for an exclusive, custom-fitted Vardo model, with the voguish style and attention to detail. That was the power of the artiste. Now she'd be working there. How beautifully Madame moved around the room. How elegant. How exotic. And her hands fluttered like butterflies as she handled the materials for her hats. In the half-light, Ruby lifted her wrist in the air, rotating her hand, making the fingers ripple in the cold air the way Angel used to, dancing her island dance to an old Hawaiian record that had a chipped edge, so they had to put the gramophone needle in the middle of the tune. Her exposed elbow ached with cold, and she tucked her arm under the blankets. Mrs. Thompson had given her more damn sewing. She must write alarm clock on her list of things they needed. The list was too damn long to even bother writing down. Disconsolately, she shifted, trying not to crush or wake Edie. When she finally slept, her dreams were of standing in the water at the pretty cove of the old Shelley Beach, with the blue, three-humped silhouette of Rangitoto across Auckland's harbour. She was desperately trying to cut pieces of the sea with scissors, to gather them up into a bag to give them to Angel. And Madam was watching her.
You've been listening to A Respectable Veneer, a serialised novel by Rachel Doré, read by Romy Hooper. Listen to the next episode at 8 p.m. next Monday, or for the rest of the series, go to npr.nz/show/respectableveneer, or search for A Respectable Veneer wherever you find your podcasts.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.